Hello and welcome to Talent Takes Time, conversations with women in sports broadcasting. Join us as we speak about the brutal truth of an industry we all love, but one that has at times taken it all from us. Talent Takes Time isn't a sugar-coated podcast. The women we speak to have scaled the heights of success and tell it like it is. So with knowledge, our listeners can decide if this industry is for them or not. By the end of this series, you'll know if you have what it takes. My guest in this episode is worthy of a grand introduction. Jackie Oatley has an MBE for her services to broadcasting and is a woman we can safely call a trailblazer. Jackie is someone who's taken the hits so that we can walk in the path she laid for us. Her achievements are many, namely being the first female commentator to feature on Match of the Day. And if you see how female commentators are treated today, just imagine how it was for her breaking through over a decade ago in 2007. Jackie was thrown to the wolves, and I would urge you to read some of the articles she's written since about it. We began by talking about all the hard work that led her to that dream job.
Yeah, it really was hard work to get there, but in a good way. It was. I see it very much as a positive thing in the sense that for so many years, I hadn't really enjoyed school because I didn't really find the thing at school that I loved. You know, languages and PE were my favourite thing. I mean, PE by far. But of course, as you know, there wasn't a lot going on there for girls. And after that, university, did German degree and travelled. But like so many people, just didn't find my niche. I mean, I knew my passion, my overwhelming passion, but didn't think I could work in it. So once I decided after all those years, 27, what have you, to change career and dive into it, full-time work experience, 1 year post-grad, everything that went with it and work my way up from the bottom, all that hard work, it was a privilege to do it. It was a privilege to find something that finally I could actually see a future in. I didn't look too far ahead. I certainly didn't look at Match of the Day or anything television. No, not interested in TV at all. Local radio doing non-league football for me was absolutely amazing. And I was hoping one day maybe I'd get a chance on Five Live because that was my ultimate goal. But in terms of the hard work, I absolutely did not see that as, oh, I've just got to put this in to be able to get somewhere. No way. Because it felt like something I was desperate to do. And having worked in jobs that, oh, I just had no interest in and just weren't right for me, to finally be doing something, whether it was going to Frickley Athletic for Radio Leeds or to Ossett Albion or whatever, I just loved every second. So it didn't really feel like work.
I find this one of the most interesting and accurate descriptions of privilege and passion. On a daily basis, I get people contacting me, asking me how I got this job. I don't want to burst any bubbles, but the truth is you don't just get this job. You get the small job, and that leads to a slightly bigger job. And over many years of deliberate hard work and diligence, you may end up with this job. But what Jackie says is so accurate, none of it should be seen as a chore. And truthfully, if it is, this probably isn't for you. It's not to sound mean-spirited, but the job is made for people who can convey passion, whether it's a five-a-side in a boggy field or a World Cup final. And you have to learn it all before you can reach the top. Yes, some people are lucky and it can happen far quicker, but there's no such thing as overnight success, so don't look too far ahead. Jackie knew her passion but didn't know her niche, and as she found out herself, your passion is a very good place to start.
As you know, everybody has a different route in, so my route was one way in, other people start doing work experience at 16 and work their way up, other people go straight from uni and into, I mean, there are so many different paths people apply for jobs and get that way. A lot of other people do it via freelancing and get in front of people that way. So everybody is different, but I do think it's a case of once you've got an opportunity, and if you have to sort of burrow away and carve out a tiny little opportunity, whether it's answering the phones on a Saturday night or for free, or making somebody's cup of tea for free, or starting in a proper job, whatever it is, you just have to focus on that moment. Because I have a motto that, you know, the harder you work, the more opportunities arrive. And also, work hard, be nice to people. And that way, I just think you can't go wrong, because you won't have any regrets, will you, if you work hard and be nice to people. So I just think that whatever your goal ultimately, and I didn't really have much of a goal. As I mentioned, it wasn't that I was expecting ever to go work in London and do fun things there. It was very much a case of loving working for Radio Leeds where I started. It was just such a privilege, and I just worked hard at that. And literally other opportunities presented themselves as a result of that hard work.
Just want to talk about rejection and rock bottom. Now, both of us have been doing this for years, and you know, we've had successes and great jobs, but we've also had massive lows as well. I think it's really important to actually talk about that and say that there are periods within a presenter's life that you won't necessarily have work constantly. How hard is it to kind of embrace that, those moments of pause, I suppose, and just be always thinking that the next thing is right around the corner?
It is very difficult, and I'm really pleased you asked about that, because whenever I do interviews, it does tend to be, it makes it sound like a, like it's a success story or something, which it certainly doesn't feel like. And of course, we've had our highs, and we worked at the World Cup together and met up for coffee at the World Cup. And whilst that was amazing, we were talking about, well, what happens next? I mean, my contract was up at ITV at the end of that World Cup. I didn't have an agent. I had no idea. I blubbed on Mark Pugach one morning at breakfast in this beautiful hotel where we were spending a month with all the pundits. Highlight of my life, I had no idea what I was flying back to, honestly. So it is really difficult, and it's still difficult now. You know, we've just had big knockbacks. We're both freelance, and in my show at Sunday Supplement has just ended. And
yeah, really sad to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. But that is life, and that is the life that we've chosen. We've not chosen to be in a relatively stable environment, although I'm not too sure what that is at the moment. Everybody is going through it, not just our industry, so many people in other walks of life, but we chose this path. So we have to take these lows as well as the highs, the World Cups, the Euros, the, you know, the fun stuff that other people look at you and think, wow, they've made it. And we're there at World Cups going, we don't feel like we've made it. We're embracing this moment and loving it, but our feet are so firmly on the ground that we know that that ground can be taken away from under us any minute. And even taking away the current financial environment that everybody's in, you say one thing out of order on air and you can find your entire career gone, by the way.
I'm so pleased we spoke about this. And you may not realise it, but for every successful presenter you see on the TV, they'll have had periods of lows, times when work has gone or they've been replaced. It happens so often we may not even notice it. But as Jackie explained, you can't take it too personally. That is the life and vocation we've chosen. It can be quickly taken away from you.
We also have to be really brutally honest about this. This industry is not for the faint-hearted. Maybe we're all a little bit faint-hearted at the start where we're kind of working out going, okay. And then it does really sort out those who are prepared to work every Saturday, every Sunday, Sunday night, Monday night, overnight, Thursday nights, as I started on overnights at Five Live, and it was an absolute dream to do that. If you're one of these many, many students who, frankly, I'm a little bit worried about, I have to be honest, coming out of universities, because there isn't just a staff job for everybody. There just isn't. So it really is a case of the survival of the fittest. And those students who have the aptitude and the attitude and the never say die spirit, those who are prepared to make it happen, to give everything, maybe they'll have to work on the side realistically to have some extra income to keep going, to have something to fall back on. That's how things are maybe changing a little bit. But it's not just an industry where, oh, if you work hard in this job, well, great things will happen. It's just not, because as we know, there are some incredible people in our industry, in broadcast, in print, for goodness sake, where they're having such a tough time, some really talented people who don't have any work at the moment. So I don't want to be negative, but I do think it's really important that we are honest with people and say,
yeah, you're being realistic.
It is a tough world. So if you think, well, you know, I work Monday to Friday and I'm sure I can get one of those jobs, you don't have to do much around it. That's possibly not very realistic, to be honest.
This is a really important point. Jackie is so right. Yes, you can earn decent money in the industry, but only really at the very top of the pyramid. For that uphill climb, you'll be supplementing it, working unsociable hours and having to put in the kind of workload that could see you earning more in any kind of non-skilled work. It's brutal, but it's the truth. There are those who make it look easy, but remember, just like those living their best lives on Instagram, this industry is mostly smoke and mirrors. You need to look busy to get booked. What you're seeing on the outside may not necessarily be the true picture. We'll be back on Talent Takes Time after this short break. Welcome back to Talent Takes Time and my conversation with Jackie Oatley. In this episode, we've already spoken about the challenges Jackie has faced in her broadcast career, and of course, there have been many. One of the other amazing things about her is that not only is she an excellent broadcaster and a massive ambassador for women's football, Jackie's also one of the key reasons we're starting to see a sisterhood in our industry. In 2007, after the backlash from her Match of the Day appearance, she sat in the upstairs room of a pub in Soho with a group of women. The meeting was instigated by Anna Kessel and Shelley Alexander, and from there they set up the group we know as Women in Football. In the near 15 years since, it's gone from strength to strength. Women in Football gives women a voice, support, and a platform to report sexism, seek advice, and feel like someone's got their back. When Jackie told me to come along, I was sceptical at first. I didn't want a space to moan about the industry that had given me so much, but I joined the group and saw an opportunity for support and togetherness.
Back in 2007, when I did my first Match of the Day, there was a little bit of a backlash, as you suggest. It was a little crazy. I mean, I think a lot of people were taken aback by just how big a news story it became. And it was unfortunate from my point of view. It wasn't enjoyable, but I've spoken about that before. That's no big deal. That's gone now. And I think that it possibly had something to do with Anna Kessel and Shelley Alexander. So Shelley of the BBC and Anna Kessel, then of The Guardian, now incredible women's sport editor of The Telegraph. Talk about the right person for the right job. And they got together and decided to form a group called Women in Football for women who work in football, on the basis that we didn't really have a natural network. So men traditionally would work on Fleet Street and then go to the pubs on Fleet Street to swap stories, swap notes, talk about what jobs were going and get each other work and help each other out. And we just didn't have that natural network because there tended to be one of us women in our office, one of us working in the marketing department of a club, or one of us on a boardroom, or one of us in the press box. And it was a really, really good idea. And it was a few of us got together in top floor of a pub in Soho, and the likes of Jackie Bass, who was working in football, and I'm trying to think of the order that people came. Later on, Joe Tung, who has been an incredible influence, and various other women, all just from different areas, mostly from media, because they're the ones that we knew, but not exclusively so. Just wanted to help out other women and started putting random meetings together. So initially we were at West Ham United's old ground, and I think there were about 40 of us, I think, in the first one. And it was just literally a case of women showing up if they worked in football, and we'd have the panel. I tended to chair them and have different interesting people on the panel who would talk about their experiences, and then people in the room could share their experiences. There was nothing really more fancy than that. It was just a case of swapping contacts, getting to know each other, and then building our own organic network to help each other out. So certainly not a man-bashing organisation, as I think some people maybe cynically assume, who've maybe not been. It's nothing like that. It was nothing but supportive, positive, and engaging men to help really, I don't like the expression, level the playing field, but you know what I mean. It was very, football's always been very, very male-dominated in the UK in particular, but across the world as well. And we just wanted to make women feel that they belong and to help women to reach their potential in whatever field it was, whether it was as a physio, whether it was in the boardroom, or whether it was a press officer or journalism. And there's still a long way to go on all those fronts, but Women in Football has grown exponentially since then, and people have working for Women in Football officially, rather than just us kind of texting each other and cobbling press releases together as and when something happened. And Vicky Orvice, the late great Vicky Orvice, would be in a hospital waiting room for her cancer treatment, and she'd write a press release given her experience. And everybody really pitched in the early days. It's more professional now with sponsors. The likes of Barclays have been absolutely fantastic, and Ebru Coxall, who's chair now, and she puts on these wonderful leadership meetings and days to help women fulfil their potential. So really, it's such a force for good. I'm so proud to have just played a tiny wee little part, but to have been involved at all is wonderful. And now I'm an ambassador rather than a director.
In 2018, WIF launched a huge campaign that would change the landscape for women working in the football industry forever. It empowered businesses, celebrities, and members of the public to identify one way they could take action to contribute towards an improvement for women in the game through practical help. What if we pledged to make sure 50% of our panellists for Soccer Special were women? Asked Sky Sports. What if we offered to publish a book from a female author? Asked publisher Floodlit Dreams. What if we made a special emoji for WIF? Asked Twitter. And there were more. The what if pledges poured in. I spoke to Jackie about it.
Oh, so proud, because people such as Anna and Joe and all those wonderful women and men now who've come in, everybody has played their part in creating something so fantastic. And there's been so much support from outside. From Miles Jacobson, for example, from Football Manager, is incredible support. And he's one of those people who has pledged via What If to make a real difference in terms of female representation in his video game. And there is so, it was just a great idea, a great concept, a wonderful campaign. And people from all sorts of different organisations have pledged to do something practical. I think in the early days, we would talk a lot and we would support each other, and it was mostly to do with words. Whereas that campaign was so effective. And that, I think, is testament to how women in football has evolved, that not only do they emotionally support, do they support by word of mouth and helping each other out and hearing your jobs going and promoting each other, but the practical support that has come from all avenues of football and organisations in and around football to offer opportunities to women, to promote women. When I say promote, I mean give those opportunities for training, perhaps, and to change the culture as well, because that's the key thing. It's not going to change overnight. A macho, male-dominated culture isn't going to change overnight. So organisations such as Football Writers Association, that I'm on the national committee of, and Carrie Brown as chair, and does an incredible amount of work on there, and Alison Rudd and previously Vicky Orvice was on there too. All these organisations are evolving and becoming more diverse, and of course we hear so much more about inclusion of Black people as well, and ethnic minorities, more Asian people being given opportunities. And I think it's about changing attitudes as well, so that people with talent, people with the ability, people with the dedication, who seek the qualifications and the training that they need to be able to do well in these jobs, are given that opportunity to shine, which perhaps wasn't the case in years gone by. So yes, I'm so proud of all the people that have been involved in women in football in particular, and now Football Writers Association too, trying to make a difference and trying to actively give people the confidence to shine and to be the best that they can be. The rest is up to them. So it's not about pushing people who aren't good enough. It's not about giving people jobs that they're not suited to just because they're female or a minority. Not at all. It's just about, if people are dedicated, are hardworking, are desperate to do the job, are talented, they have the aptitude, it's just a case of saying, look, we can open these doors and you have to push yourself through it, but at least those doors aren't shut anymore.
WIF keeps Jackie so busy, and it's easy to forget she's a mother of two small children. And so, of course, we had to speak about the struggles and the realities of motherhood.
My piece of advice is something I discovered. Well, certainly, on the one hand, don't put it off and don't not have children because you want to follow your dream. That's one thing I would say, because this industry is not necessarily going to reward you for that. It might be that you put it off for a little while, which is fine, but I know people who've not had children on purpose because they felt they couldn't be in this industry and do that, and then, you know, come their 50s and what have you, they don't have the children or the grandchildren. So think very carefully about that. You can do both, definitely, but on the second hand, you need to have an understanding partner. Oh my goodness, not just understanding, but massively supportive, somebody who is absolutely prepared to have the kids every Saturday and every Sunday with you potentially not being there. So that is a conversation. And thirdly, if I may, Ali, because I know you said briefly, when it comes to childcare, this is a big thing, because most people I know, most of the mums in my village, they have 3-day a week jobs. They work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So their childminder works Monday and Friday. Easy peasy. For me, and for you as well, we don't have that luxury of those regular hours, and actually I'm fine with that. So I've actually turned people into childminders, and this is my biggest tip. Don't just look for advertised childminders and say, could you have my kids ad hoc? Because they'll probably go, no, I've got certain slots I need to fill, and that's my income. But I turned somebody who was an after-school carer and a wonderful person into a childminder. She took the qualifications and she had my baby first off. So that was my biggest tip. And then a really good friend, my son's best friend, when I was stuck for a Friday childminder, because a lot of them don't work then, and that's my busiest day prep-wise, I turned her into a childminder. She only has my kids on a Friday after school, but I pay her the same as a childminder. It works for her and it works for me. So don't panic if you're thinking, I've got an ad hoc job, how on earth do I find childcare with no family nearby, as we don't have. Talk to people, ask around the village, talk to the people who know everybody and say, do you know somebody who might do this? And that way you get the best recommendations of people, of humans, as well as the people who could maybe do those hours.
Jackie has been honest about that. Childcare juggles are the most stressful part of the job for sure. Not only that, take her advice about not putting things off. I would describe myself as a career girl. I always have been. When I announced to my boss I was pregnant, I told him I'd return to the office after 6 weeks. I was insulted when he told me I might change my mind. And guess what? 2 children later, I realise I'm still in love with my career. But yes, I do have other priorities. And I do adore motherhood. So please don't make the mistake I made of never thinking you'll change. Because people do change. And motherhood has the power to turn even the most career-minded person into a doting mothering cliche. In addition to this, it's worth pointing out that family planning is not what the media makes it out to be. I speak to so many young women who say they're waiting for just the right time to start a family. Well, it never is just the right time. I too looked for the tournaments I would miss and the jobs and promotions I would have to pass up, and I waited for just the right time. Unfortunately for me, I learnt the hard way that having a baby is not necessarily so easy. I suffered 2 miscarriages after 12 weeks and did not feel myself for quite some time after. And so it was my body that decided when was the right time to start trying again. My seemingly perfect planning went right out of the window. So please remember this. That's all we got time for on the 3 T's. Talent takes time. I hope you enjoyed Jackie's honesty. She is a true inspiration and we all owe a lot to her. See you next time. Talent Takes Time is presented by me, Alison Bender. The series producer is Gary Hayes, and Matt Alabaster has produced all our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our music. If you'd like to know more about my career in the media, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at AliBenderTV. You can also sign up to my website, alisonbender.com, for more information on getting into the media industry. This has been a production for the Highway 61 Network.